and you look at the light bulb. One. Two people? Okay. The only... No, I mean, I don't. I just was wondering. I mean, we don't normally look at the light bulb itself. We don't normally look at the sun. We don't turn the lights on to look at the light. We turn the lights on to see everything else by the light, you know. If the light bulb doesn't go on, then we look at it and think there's something wrong with the light bulb. I mean, granted, some lights are nice to look at, you know, fireplaces and campfires and candles. We kind of look at them. Fireworks, you know. But we generally don't look at the sun. We're thankful for the sun because the sun is nice to look at, but because it lights up everything in the world, you know. In a similar way, you don't go and have a bowl of salt for dinner, right? No one just eats a bowl of salt. Salt helps enhance the flavor of the foods, of the meal that we eat. But the food is the meal, not the salt. Salt preserves, salt enhances good things. But it's not the main focus. The light lets us see the beauty of the world, but it doesn't need to be the main focus. C.S. Lewis once made an analogy between the light of the sun and in our faith. He said, and I quote, "I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. The light of the sun benefits everyone, and the faith that we have benefits everyone." I've been thinking a lot lately about households, and this teaching by Jesus today is a perfect opportunity for me to share it with you. Because he says that a light is set in a lampstand where it gives light to all in the house. In any household, whether it's a household of two people or three people or four people or five people or six people, 12 people, it doesn't matter. In any household where people live together, there's a certain rhythm, a certain style of life, and it's different than living just in the same town with other people. I mean, I literally mean household. There's just a certain way that life is lived, that the members of the household agree upon, you know. No music after a certain hour. We eat dinner together at a certain time. Friday night is movie night, and we take turns cleaning the bathroom or whatever. You know, there's those rules, there's the way life is lived. I know that if I go home to my parents' house, if it's a Tuesday, I know what's going to be going on with them, and I know which show they're going to be watching in the evening and all that together. So whatever the rhythm of life is in each of your houses, I mean, I don't know what it is, it can be different. It can be difficult, actually, when you visit somebody else's house and you have to navigate the differences in the culture. It's almost as, it can be as difficult as, like, going to China and thinking, I don't understand all the rules about how life is to be lived here. Like, when I was a child, at my best friend's house, the shoes came off by the door, no exceptions. In my own house, you could wear your shoes, and it was fine, wherever, but in that house, the rule is, shoes come off at the door. And when my friends visited my house, I constantly had to remind them that we don't start eating until after we've all said grace together. That was just the rule of the house. That might not be the rule in their own houses, but in our house, that's the way it was. Well, also in a household, each member brings his or her own gifts to the mix, to the people living together. Someone might be better at cooking, another might be better at managing the funds, but each has a contribution to make. And this is true not only of biological families, which is most common, of course, but also houses of religious sisters or brothers or rectories. I know I'm the only one who lives here, but my first assignment was a very nice rectory, four priests, we all lived together, two of whom were in their 80s. And the shared rhythm of life together, of meals and the work and of prayer and of conversation and of whatever, cleaning the bathrooms, all that stuff together, it made us into a household. It wasn't an apartment building where people happened to have to live together. It was a household, and we ate together, and we prayed together. And so when one member of a household, whether it's a family or a rectory or a convent, when one person has a gift, it benefits everyone. When one person has an insight, it benefits everyone in the house. It benefits the whole house. That little light, that little gift, shines for everyone to be able to benefit from it. Same is true of the faith. Even if only one member of a household keeps the faith, it can still benefit the whole house. Because that one member lives differently and has something different to offer. That person belongs to the rhythm of the house and to the style of life in that household, but also has a different light to offer that maybe the rest of them don't have. And if it's a house wherein everyone has the faith, that same faith is shared, well, in that case, when one becomes weak, there are others there to strengthen them. We as Christians, we don't. The goal isn't to sort of like rest in holiness ourselves, to become, I'll become holy, and then you become holy, and then you become holy, and then you become, and we all sort of like, we're all on this, we're all on our own little paths, but rather we have to be holding the faith in common. So when we come into this house, we know that we have each other. We know that life and that the Christian life doesn't have to be lived alone, and that as much as we come here for ourselves, maybe, we also come here for the other people. We come here for our brothers and sisters that we're here with. We have to be light for each other. We have to be salt for each other's sakes. We help light up each other's lives, and we help strengthen each other in the faith. Now, light can light up the beautiful things, of course, but it can also highlight, you know, light shines on everything equally, whether it's pretty or whether it's not pretty. That can be a good thing, because light can highlight the ugliness. It can light up when those evil things done in the shadows, when those things done under cover of darkness, when light comes to those places, to those dark events, then something can be done about them. The doctor and the investigator both have to shine a light where the disease lies in order to be able to do anything about it. Nothing else can do the job of light except light itself. It's unique in that way. I mean, a cup can be made out of glass or plastic or metal or styrofoam. Lots of things can do the job of being a cup, but there's no replacement for light. If you don't have light, there's no other option. You have to have light. And the same thing goes with salt. If salt loses its flavor, with what can it be seasoned? There's no substitute for it. There's no replacement for salt. Nothing else can do its job. They are unique like that, and we have to be like light and salt, Jesus says. And the only way we can become like light and to become like salt is to be enlightened by God. This is why on the night before Easter, when we wait for Easter morning in the darkness, we go out into the darkness and we bless a fire. We bless a fire in the midst of the dark of night, and then we share that fire with each person. We share that little fire by sharing the candles, and what started off as one fire ends up everyone has a little piece of that fire and the little candle they're holding in their hand, and then every corner of the dark church is filled with light. It's not just filled with light. Every corner of the dark church is filled with an enlightened person. But just like any fire, that light has to be tended. It has to be stoked. Fuel has to be added to it. It needs to be cared for fear it might blow out, of course. Salt might not ever lose its flavor, but we can become less salty. We have to stay salty. Don't be bland. That's what Jesus asks of us. Don't hide in the shadows. Don't allow the darkness and the evil to expand. Instead...